Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, what is going on? My name is Justin. This is Sports Sales and Coffee, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy day and allowing me to enter your ear holes and tickle that beautiful brain of yours with a little bit of information, a little bit of knowledge, and even some motivation that will hopefully help you reach and exceed your sales goals so you can absolutely dominate. If you enjoy what you're listening to, and I really hope you do and you are, it would mean the world to me if you could like, subscribe, and comment to wherever you listen to the podcast. If you could continue to tell a friend about the podcast, it's growing every single day, and it's all because of you. And then let's be friends ourselves. Follow me on social media at Sports Sales Coffee on Instagram, Facebook, and on TikTok at SSC_podcast on Twitter, Sports Sales and Coffee on LinkedIn, or hit me up on email, sportssalescoffee@gmail.com. I will get back to you. Slide into my DMs. Let me know if you have any thoughts, your feelings, your questions. If you have an idea for an episode, whatever's under the sun, hit me up. I'll get right back to you, and we'll kind of go from there. So hope everyone's doing well. I'm not going to make this a really long intro, as I say that every time, but it might be because you know how I ramble, but this is the audio from SSC Live last week with Andrew Wolford. He is my good buddy. He's in sales. He's a closer. He's in a different sales industry as us. He's not in sports. He sells the digital space, but I felt like his knowledge, how he gets through to his clients, his customers, and he just dropped a ton of knowledge that maybe not all can be used for us selling in sports, but a lot can, or they can get you to think in a different way that maybe you can twist it and turn it and make it to your style, and you can be more effective. And at the end of the day, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for new ideas so we can get better, we can grow, we can get bigger commission checks, we can hit our sales goals and just dominate. I say that in the intro because it's true. That's what I want. I want us to all do well. So without further ado, here it is. SSC Live, the audio, episode 127, with the man, the Wolf of Charlotte, Andrew Wolford.
That man, first try. I feel like I'm a technology genius now.
You are. Yeah.
I'm absolutely not, man. We do it. You look good.
Hey, thanks, buddy. You look good too.
No, you're just saying that now. I appreciate it.
You look the same.
Absolutely the same, man. Hair's terrible, but go from there. Couldn't get in the barber this week or the last 2 months, so.
Hey, it's my monthly, I'm on the monthly cut schedule now. It used to be every 2 weeks.
Now, are you trying to, tighten up a little bit by yourself, or are you not touching it at all? Are you going the
full month? I've always been tightening the beard up. Keeping the beard fresh, but up top, I let the professionals take care of that.
Yeah. You messed that up. You got to wait a while.
Right.
Yeah, we used to cut our own hair.
Luckily, in today's age, you can mess it up and nobody will know, because I haven't had any human contact in about a year.
Yeah. I go in the office. I sit in my closet. I just shut the door and I just sit there. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
that's it. And then if my hair, I just kind of make sure I stand up in the Zoom calls, and no one can see.
Just from the face up, from the chest up.
That's it. You gotta give it to them what they want.
Exactly
what they want. Well, Andrew, man, I appreciate you jumping on. Haven't talked to you in a little bit. I'm glad you're doing well, and we'll just kick it off. Introduce yourself. Who is Andrew Wolford?
Where do I start?
It's a very. I ask a lot of loaded questions.
There's a lot of layers to that question, and I don't even know where to start to unpack it.
Yeah.
Who am I? Well, I'm a former Mainer.
Yep.
Born and raised. We met, as young lads, like you said, and it's been a journey through my life. A lot of lot of learning experiences, a lot of good times, you know, and, you know, I'm in a good place, you know.
Got
a
yeah.
wife, a baby boy now.
How's that beautiful boy doing?
Oh, he's great.
It's awesome. How's dad life treating you?
It's good.
It's right on the curve, you know.
You want me to tell you the real story?
Yep. But I don't think I have time for the real story. Yeah. It's you used to think you didn't get a lot of sleep when we were younger, and then partying and
right.
Yeah.
But that's all my partying days. I think baby boy's paying me back because he likes to sleep all night and sleep all day and party all night.
Ooh, he's on that opposite schedule.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's nice and fun. That's always good. How old is he now? Three months. 3 months. Yep. So starting to recognize, starting to kind of know who you are. It's a pretty magical time. And then when they start moving, it's a totally different story.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, you've been there a few times.
Twice. So I say it's like college basketball though. Two halves, I'm done. I'm out. I'm not trying to make it three periods. We're good.
Yeah.
Two and out. But so I'm so pumped that you're joining on. We've known each other for a really, really long time, and you're a tremendous salesperson. But how did you and why did you get into sales? Why did you try to take this journey for yourself?
Yeah, because nothing else really worked out in life, so sales was was an easy transition. No, you know, as far as sales go, you know, I think, you know, natural salespeople are born with the skills, you know, and, you know, being able to communicate with people and talk, and that's the first piece of it. So my first sales gig was selling cell phones in the main mall in one of the kiosks. We also had a store. So that was my real first transactional sales gig. I think I was sophomore year in college. And then, you know, I needed a job to make some money to, you know, pay for living expenses and all those other things. And sales, you know, ended up being, you know, a really fruitful even at that time.
Absolutely.
And I look back and I tell a story of my first sales gig in cell phones, and it was the boom. It was the boom of cell phones. Back when I was slinging cell phones, I mean, cell phones were hot.
Yeah.
iPhone hadn't even existed yet. The hottest phone on the market that I was slinging was the Razor.
Oh, yeah. Now, let me ask you real quick. When you sold Razor, did they come with something attached to your belt, or was that a extra piece you had to sell?
It came with one, but if you wanted an extra one, upsell.
Upsell. And you know you had to get one. If you had a Razor, you had to put that on your belt so everyone would see it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a fashion statement. You know, people wear Rolexes in today's age. Back in the day, it was a Razor phone.
And you could tell if someone was really rolling with money if they had a Sidekick.
Oh, yeah. All those keyboards of text.
But you look back, though, that was like 10 cents a text message. Like,
Yeah.
Buddy, you're loaded if you're sending a bunch of text messages before 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. You better shut your phone down. You're getting overages.
Absolutely overages.
Back when roaming fees were how I made my money.
Really? So that was the money maker of the roaming fees?
No. The company did.
So
my title was a retail wireless consultant.
Big title.
So there I was in the main mall, you know, my U.S. Cellular, you know, button-up shirt, my unironed khakis because I was in college. And it was, you know, try to get as many people signed up for cell phone services. You know, family plans. Oh, bring on the family. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. Oh, you got 6 kids? Okay, come on down.
Let me take care of you. So what did you learn most about that experience of, especially being in the kiosk, where you got to almost yell at people to come see you?
Like, yeah.
What did you learn from that experience that almost do you feel like has stayed with you to your career now, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think I learned the core, you know, pieces of salesmanship from that job, you know, being put in, you know, uncomfortable situations, you know. So just a preference before we really dive into it, I worked at the cell phone kiosk that we didn't yell at customers.
You didn't?
That was T-Mobile.
Yes. Yep.
So I always used to compare it to Anchorman, you know, so it's like the fighting anchors.
Yep.
So It was us in T-Mobile in the mall, and it was like we didn't talk to each other. We weren't friends. We were co-work enemies.
When you saw each other at Panda Express, you made sure there was two customers.
Side. Oh, that's the T-Mobile guy.
Yeah, don't want him. Nope. Don't want him. But yeah, I sold cell phones for a little bit. I thought it was a really good experience because one, it's back to back to back to back meetings.
You're fast paced.
Always moving. So if you make a mistake, you can easily figure it out and then get over it. And
yeah, time is money.
Time is money. You want to have them sign up, get your stuff, upsell them. And I also
move
thought
them out.
Move them out. But I also thought when you said we made the joke about upsells, that was a big thing of learning to ask those questions of going for the extra, not just, hey, here's your razor and leave. Man, you need some headphones.
Yep.
You need the case.
Yep. You're gonna need insurance.
You're gonna need insurance.
Yep. You're gonna need that data plan because I mean, look at your kids over there. They're already texting their friends.
Yeah. Already texting. They're gonna play Snake all night and you're just gonna rank up that bill.
Yeah, may cost you a little bit more now, but it's going to save you in the long run.
Bingo. That's right. That was that little flip of pay it now, you know, upfront cost.
The value add.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, I look back at that as, you know, really sharpening and learning, you know, sales 101, you know, especially when you're in that. And it was face-to-face, you know. So you're dealing with unhappy customers. You know, because you're also a consultant. So not only are you selling, but you're also, you know, supporting current customers, you know, and every opportunity that you get in front of somebody, it's a sales opportunity. And I took advantage of that. You know, I was there to make money. You know, I had to maximize my shift, you know, so especially, you know, being in college and going to school, you know, it was 4-hour shifts at a time and then weekends. A lot of people didn't like to work weekends, and obviously during college it was a little bit of a struggle to me, but that was the money day. That's when the mall was packed. That's when the customers were there. So didn't matter. I was going to get to work, and that's how I was going to make my money.
Yeah. With the limited hours, you got to hustle. You got to maximize that time and move along. And how long were you selling cell phones for? It was three years?
3 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so after cell phones, you transitioned and went to outside sales.
Yeah.
And sold more. How was that big change from going from retail to outside sales?
So it wasn't a big change as far as the customer interaction, but it was a little bit of a change because I went from B2C, you know, selling cell phones, business to consumer, and then B2B, where I was selling businesses. So and then I stayed within the kind of telecom world, obviously, because I gained a lot of knowledge of, you know, cell phones and the infrastructure and technology. And so that led me into working for Fairpoint Communications out of Maine, which is a telecom communication. And we were, hitting the streets, knocking on doors and, trying to get people switch, you know, to Fairpoint for their internet and phone service.
Yeah. Business. So a little dumb and hustle, but yeah, knocking on doors, getting doors slammed in your face and not just people walking by you in the mall, but more of like calling your names and.
Yeah. Well, and it sharpened my other skills because, you know, when I was in the mall, you know, it was most of the customers were coming to me, you know, they were coming to the kiosk and they were, you know, they had a mission and they were seeking us out. You know, that was a warm lead. So I was constantly working with warm leads.
Absolutely.
With straight outside sales, you're cold calling. So you got to turn the opportunity into a warm lead and create value and figure out how you can position yourself. And figure out what's going to turn the needle for them to want to switch.
Absolutely. Now, was there something that you struggled with, like early on going to outside sales that you kind of had to overcome? I know for me, when I started doing business to business, the money got higher. Like I was selling like more expensive things. And to me, I had to stop thinking with my wallet to be like, oh man, I don't have $7,000. Like there's no way I could spend that. It doesn't matter what I could spend. It was mattered what the prospect had. It was like, it was two different amounts of money. Did you struggle with something like that you had to teach yourself to overcome it?
Yeah, I didn't really struggle with the money part, you know, because, you know, I think I learned skills of asking for money back when I was a kid, you know, and I was trying to, you know, get $1 out of my parents. And when I got $1, I wanted $5.
Mm-hmm.
So what I struggled with was, you know, cold calling, you know, because the fear of cold calling, the fear of rejection, you know, that's what I struggled with. And no one likes to cold call, you know, it's the grind, it's the hustle. Everyone loves to close. You know, close is the fun part. And that's and that's what, you know, why people get into sales and why people stay into sales is the thrill you get from the close.
Love that.
So it was, you know, getting myself motivated to get in front of as many people as possible. You know, and you know, I did a combination of, you know, knocking on doors, walking through downtown Portland, and, you know, many other businesses, but also, you know, I was tech savvy. I, you know, had been tech savvy. So I really set myself apart from the other, you know, outside sellers that were at, Fairpoint, which, you know, traditionally telecom, you know, it's, you know, we looked at as the old boys club.
Yeah.
So I was the youngest outside seller at the time. So I was doing email, I was texting, I was, you know, using social media. I was any way I could get, you know, a meeting with a business. Was doing, and I think that's what really helped me, you know, be successful in that role was, you know, you got to get in front of as many people as possible. But then also I was looking for situations that nobody else was looking for.
Okay.
So one of the biggest deals I sold was providing, fiber out to Great Diamond Island.
I remember that. I remember like us talking a little bit about that. I forgot that you mentioned Diamond Island. I was like, yep.
So it kind of, you know, happened where I was knocking on a door in downtown Portland, and I came across a investment company, real estate company.
Yep.
And it just happened that, you know, the timing was perfect. And he's like, I don't need service, but actually we're working on this big project. We're building a hotel out on Great Diamond Island. And we're going to need, you know, high speed internet because it's a luxury hotel.
Yeah.
So it was a long sale. I mean, I was, you know, getting on the ferry. I was going out to the island. I was, you know, working with different things. Then it finally came through and it was, you know, I think, you know, probably not the biggest sale, at the company. But self-prospected and definitely within that year or two, it was the biggest one-time, you know, sale for internet and phone.
Good for you. And it all started with you just kind of cold calling a business that turned into this.
And this is, you know, one of those sales stories where it was like, that was the last door, you know, and it was the door that we were almost not going to knock on. And I was like, you know what, we're in the building, let's just do it, you know. But I had that, my internal, you know, doubt was telling me like, oh, they're not going to need us, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But just went for it. And it turned out, you know, big. So, I mean, that's big piece that I learned too, is to just make that extra knock, make that extra call, you know, because you never know what it could turn into.
You never know. It could always be that last one where you're ready to give up. It's like, and when you make these pre, you know, determining ideas of, you're like, you know, they're not going to buy anything. They're done. We're gone. Like, it's a waste of my time.
Yeah.
Those are usually the people that sometimes you get either a good call, good knock from, that sometimes turn into something. For you, your biggest sale to that point by made this little hole in the wall company that you almost didn't want to do.
Right.
You always say that next step.
You always take it. So that was the biggest piece I learned from that is, you know, really, you know, stepping outside of the comfort zone. Cold calling, learning how to accept rejection, and hunting and just trying to figure out, you know, how to get the sale and find sales and find revenue and you know, make money.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to think outside the box. I've noticed that too. I've used social media a ton, Facebook, Instagram, sliding into people's DMs of businesses and cutting corners from the gatekeeper. And it's just, you're right. Thinking the next step and kind of thinking ahead of your competition, and even sometimes thinking ahead of your prospect of how can I get to them quicker, because gatekeepers' jobs are to hang up on you and tell you no. They tell you no, Mr. and Mrs. Smith is busy right now when they're sitting back there twiddling their thumbs. Right. You got to try to get to them as fast as possible. And
I can see him. He's eating a turkey sandwich.
He's not doing anything. I know that. Like, let me just set it. Yeah, but going door to door is always fun. Oh, yeah. Always fun. I mean, it's, you never know what you're gonna come across. You never know what you're gonna see.
It took a couple weeks, you know, the fear and the you know, I don't want to bother people, you know, and get that out of my head. And then it was just like my chest was puffed, my shirt was ironed, and I'm just blowing the door in and saying, "Hello, I'm here."
Khakis finally ironed. You're just ready to go.
Yeah, doing a little spin, show them the booty.
Getting right through there. Man, I bet the older gatekeepers just loved you or hated you.
Well, there's no in between. You got to find your angle, you know? You got to find your angle. And getting through the gatekeeper, you know, that was always – I like a challenge, you know?
Yeah.
I like a challenge, you know?
You feel that commitment. I will always say there was one time I was really, really jealous because I heard a line and I loved it. And it was something that I just knew I could never pull off. I could never do. I was training, and my trainer, she was really, really good. And we go together into this business. And the gatekeeper is super salty. And she just wants nothing to do with me. She's super mean and super rude. And I'm trying to leave a packet for her, and she doesn't even want anything to do with it. My trainer jumps over me and was like, "Oh, my God, I love that necklace. Where did you get it?" And then they have this great conversation built off a very materialistic, like, "I love that dress. That will look so good with your hair." And I was like, "I can't say that. That's going to come off
right.
like I'm hitting on them, and I'm going to get the cops called on me." And I was so jealous of that line, and I couldn't find, like, what the male equivalent could be from that, have it come out as genuine. But she could knock down doors because she could play that card. And I was like, I was real jealous.
You haven't used that line yet?
I tried, and then people like leave, and I'm like,
yeah. And then I've been escorted out of the building.
Never returned. Then I got fired, so it didn't end well for me. But
it was worth the shot.
It was worth the shot. So you did Fairpoint for a year and a half, almost 2 years, and then you jumped. And one of the huge reasons I wanted you on the podcast was, I think especially most of the listeners work in sports and say, but I believe sales are sales, and I think if you only try to learn from one aspect of like one industry, you lose a bunch. You can pull from all these ideas. But for a while, you were just a closer. You did the fun part for almost what, 2 years, year and a half, two?
Yeah, almost 2 years.
2 years. Well, you just flew around and closed.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that, of what your weekly or, you know, routine would be.
Yeah, so joined a company called Townsquare, Townsquare Media, and they were starting up a digital division called Townsquare Interactive. And I had always been into social media. You know, I started my first business when I was a freshman in college, doing entertainment and events and promotions. And so there's all that on the side as well that we won't get into.
That'd be a whole different episode.
A lot of sales skills came from that, being in front of big crowds and things like that, which, you know, able me to be in any situation. But I was the senior training events manager for Townsquare Interactive, which is the digital arm for Townsquare Media, which owns the radio stations in Maine, and then we have stations all over the country. So I would fly out Monday morning and fly into one of our radio markets in, say, Missoula, Montana, or fly me back to Portland, Maine, or I'd be in Texarkana, Texas, or Yakima, Washington. So all the small to mid-sized markets across the country.
Yep.
So I wasn't flying to LA. I wasn't flying to Miami. So I was flying into our radio markets. So I would do a training with the radio sales reps that were selling our radio products, and train them on our, you know, Townsquare Interactive websites, SEO, you know, digital solutions. But really, after I did a little training and kind of got them hopped up, they pretty much locked me in a conference room, and it was a revolving door of their clients coming in and me running meetings on the hour every hour from Monday to Friday, and then I'd fly home. And then I would, you know, get a couple hours of sleep on the weekend and jump back on a plane Monday and do it all over again and all over again and all over again.
All over again.
So that position in sales was the most – I mean, I learned so much because I ran so many different meetings. So being, you know, in a different area, you know, say Montana or Texas or, you know, Illinois or, you know, Colorado. So we have markets all over the place. And, you know, I was running probably 8, you know, sometimes 10 meetings a day.
So now, did you feel like where you were in different cities, your presentation or your pitch had to change a little bit to go like with the culture there, or was it
and my process? No, I had it down packed.
Yeah,
it was exactly the same the whole time. Now my verbiage and how I, you know, communicated definitely changed, because I, you know, had to assimilate with, you know, the customer in the, the business. And, you know, it, whether it be a, you know, roofing contractor or, you know, a dental group or a law firm or a car dealership or, you know, you name it. I met with
everyone,
every business type, and pretty much everywhere in the U.S.
Damn. So you're just flying everywhere, having meetings, just flying, doing the, like we talked about, kind of the fun part of sales where you're closing a lot and you're doing the meetings and you took out the nitty gritty grind of.
I had the radio reps be my cold callers, and they would have meetings set up prior to me coming into the market. So I would be coming in like the big digital guy, you know. And you know, the biggest piece of the training in the Monday was getting the radio reps to trust me with their clients, because a lot of these businesses that they were bringing in were, you know, sometimes even friends and family, because it's a small market. But also they're radio clients that are spending and buying radio advertising from them.
And they don't want you to soil that relationship.
Absolutely. One,
they don't necessarily know you. So let me, how did you, maybe not with both, how did you build rapport with the prospects you were sitting down with that you were just meeting to kind of get that relationship? Then also, how are you building rapport with the sales rep to have them trust you also to know that, hey, Andrew's not going to come in, screw them over, and then my deal is going to go poof, you know, in 3 months, I'm going to lose all that revenue that I had coming in.
Yeah. So the biggest thing was getting them to trust me, you know, and, you know, just kind of letting my guard down and not coming in like the corporate guy. I was just a regular guy, you know.
You weren't trying to be Glengarry Glenn Ross.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was bringing the coffee. They have to close. They were getting it for free. I was there to close. So you guys drink the coffee. And just let me do what I do. And you guys can't come in the room because I need to be alone. Seriously.
Yeah. So you wouldn't bring them in too?
Like, no, because they would mess up my flow.
Got it. That makes sense.
Because you know, in the first couple, you know, that I did, you know, they were trying to talk and build so much rapport.
Got it.
I had an hour for each client. I had to run them through our solutions, our pitch. I had to build a rapport. I had to close them down. I had to register them in our system, and then I had to kick them out.
So you had 60 minutes.
I had 60 minutes to do front to back everything.
Everything. So you had it down like a well-oiled machine that you knew. I mean, probably a bad analogy, but like you're a comedian where you knew where you had to take pauses for laughs. You knew where you had to keep on going, because if it slowed down.
And because, you know, especially year two, I mean, it was like I was a robot at that point, you know.
Yeah.
I was so well oiled, and it was, you know, I had my process down so good that when a situation happened, I already predicted what they were going to say.
Yeah.
So I was always one step ahead of them.
That's a great spot to be. That's why I think in a lot of sales jobs, after multiple times, especially when you're cold calling, not to kind of switch gears, but it's more of you kind of can anticipate issues that are going to come up, objections, objectives that you can overcome, that, hey, I know when they say this, I'm going to say this, or I'm going to do this and that. So you had it down packed. Now, how big of building rapport was important for you for the prospect?
I didn't really have time to build a lot of rapport. So I had to, the biggest thing for me with rapport was getting them to trust me.
Yeah.
So I had to do that very quickly. So I quickly learned how to, you know, fine-tune my pitch to where I didn't have to talk about their CAD or, you know, football scores or any of that stuff. And I learned and I realized that they don't actually want to. They want to talk business.
Yep.
But how I built rapport was building trust in the beginning. So I started the meeting by controlling the meeting and laying out the agenda for the meeting. This is what's going to happen. This is what we're going to go over. This is what we're going to do. And at the end of the meeting, I'm going to ask you for your business.
Right there.
I prefer to meet like that. So how I built quick rapport was giving them an overview of our company, you know, who we are, our elevator pitch, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't start by asking them questions. I started by telling them who I am, what I do, where I'm from, and then our company. So that allowed me to get them to buy in. And you can see them, the body language switch.
When it came through.
Hey, this guy's legit. I trust him and he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So they're going to listen, because when I didn't do that in the beginning, when I was first learning the process, I allowed them to control the conversation. And next thing I knew, we're an hour into it, and I haven't even got a chance to dive into what I needed to. And I had clients waiting to, you know, that had scheduled meetings there. So I had to learn very quickly to build that rapport, but really it was all about trust. And I wouldn't stop until I saw that they trusted me.
Gotcha.
And I read their body language on okay. And sometimes they'll sit back and they'll give you signs of, okay, I'm listening now.
Got it. And that you kind of overcame that barrier. And that's what I found out too. It's building more strategic rapport rather than the football scores, Brad Pitt movies, what's right. happening. It's how can I kind of help your business? And then now you're in a different role that time. I feel like the football scores and everything else comes later to build a friendship.
Correct.
After the close. And right. then it strengthens it. But at that time, you want to show them, how can you help them? How can exactly. we help each other? And I'm not just mm-hmm. here to take your money and leave. I'm going to try to help. So how did you, in these short times, in these short meetings, or these hour long that you had a time, how were you able to kind of pinpoint their needs and then offer a solution that would fit it? Because I have to assume that each meeting, they would have different needs for each one. Now, I know it might be a little different, but it wasn't all so much one size fits all for everybody.
No, we had different packages, different solutions. But at the end of the day, you know, I would say probably 50% of the time they knew why they were there to
yep.
to meet me about the opportunity of a new website, you know, and being found on Google. Other times they didn't even know why they were there, you know, because, you know, the radio sales reps had a number they had to hit, and and there sometimes businesses, but when I turned those into a close, that made waves across, you know, the local market, but boy, yeah. did I feel good after that.
I bet you felt great when they came in and said, wait, what am I doing here? And right. I bet you just awesome. Okay.
All right. Well, where do I start? I got to find a problem. So I have to start asking a question, because yep. if you don't have a problem, I have nothing to solve.
And that's what I think is and I'm so happy you said that. That's a huge thing where, even in sports and selling tickets, there has to be a problem or an issue that we can provide a solution to. That's the big thing of sales.
Well, yeah. And if there's not, then you're talking about a expense, not an investment.
Exactly. And then
an investment is, hey, I'm investing in my business. And expense is like, oh, this is going to cost me money.
Yeah.
Yet both of them are going to cost you money. But it's how the business owner looks at it and how you get them to look at it. Because if you get them to look at it as an expense, I mean, your closing percentage is going to go way down. Guaranteed.
Wait not. Or you might still get it, but it's not a long-term partnership. Right. It's a 1 year. Okay, yeah, no, I was right. I never should have done this. You know, goodbye.
That's where the talking, the sports and the, you know, how's the family comes in is retaining that client.
Yep. Yep. But closing originally.
It's finding, you know, finding a pain and a need.
Yeah.
If there's no pain or need there, then, I mean, you might as well stop the meeting.
Yeah. Now, do you have any kind of go-to questions to find that pain?
Oh, yeah. I had specific questions. Every client got asked the same exact questions. So I was prepared. Because those questions, those answers that I would get, whether it be this or that, would then lead me. And I use this analogy, and I use it as it's ammunition, okay, for me to lock and load my gun to close you down. So every question I asked was giving me a bullet for my gun.
Yep. That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean – that's what you need. And the more bullets you have, the better your chances are.
Right. You have to wear armor, and they have their hands and they're shut off to you, and have their hands closed, and you know they're barely listening. You know, you're going to get through somehow.
Yeah.
So it comes down to question based selling. That's the most strategic way, is asking questions.
Yeah.
You know, stop talking about yourself and stop talking about the product and how great it is. No, I didn't even talk about what I was selling them until the end.
Yeah. Because you were trying to find out, and then you were pitching your product with, this can help you with X.
This will solve your problem.
And that's what people want.
You have this problem, and I'm going to fix it for you. And mm-hmm. it's only going to cost you $19.99.
$19.99. Four easy payments. Can't wait.
Just go ahead and I'm going to, you know, sign here. top copy's yours.
So
I used that tactic, which is an old sales tactic, but I had, you know, so I printed off paper agreements, and one of the strategic things I did that no one else in the company did was because I taught myself how to use Photoshop, you know, back when I was doing entertainment and promotions.
Yep.
So I changed our rate card. I marked all the packages up $300.
Okay.
And what I did was I left it on the thing. So I slid it across there. And what I did was, because you're here today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and knock $200 off of that right off the gate. They felt like they were getting something.
Yeah.
Even though I was still $100 over the package price.
they felt, yep.
So I had a lot of room to work with. And most of the time I didn't start with, hey, I'm going to knock $200 off. But I had that in my back pocket.
Yeah.
And I started with $100. And then if price was the objection, okay, which I isolated, which was price, that's the only thing holding us back today. If this service was free, would you sign up today? And if they say yes, okay, then price is the objection.
Price is the objection. Yeah.
So
and then you figure
I
it out.
Leverage at that point because I had perceived value.
Yeah. Because you built it up. You had all those bullets from asking the questions and firing up the pain, and you could isolate that. That's great. So, I mean, you must have dealt with a bunch of objections, you know, objectives. How, you know, when someone get cold feet or when someone would give you the, let me think about it, and they kind of wanted to back out, how did you overcome that, knowing that you were on this, like, this short scale? Would you follow up with you next week, or what was your way?
I had to, you know, I was on a schedule, so I had to close them. On the spot. Now there was definitely some that you know flowed in a couple days later, and especially in some markets I went to, like when some of these business owners said, "Hey, I got to talk this over with my wife." It wasn't an objection. It's a family business, and I could see that. But if I knew that was a false objection, I would continue to ask questions to figure out what the real objection was.
Yep.
And I wouldn't let them leave until I you know got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and that's true, because a lot of times, sometimes prospects will just, maybe it's just as human, we don't want to like upset someone, so we kind of come up with this little white lie.
All the time.
And it's like, oh, it's this. When actually, as salespeople, I want you to tell me the absolute truth. If you just hate my product or you hate my idea, tell me, and I'm okay with it. But let's not beat around the bush and see, you know, oh, it's this. No. Tell me what it is so we can kind of move past it.
Yep. And yep. I would use my temporary time in the market, you know, and there's so many different ways. It doesn't matter what situation you are in, you always can find leverage, and you have to have your leverage in your little fanny pack. Okay. And this leverage is going to work with this client. This leverage is going to work here. But if you don't have any leverage, you know, then you have nowhere to kind of go.
You got
and help you isolate the real objection.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it was asking them, and then letting them respond and not trying to talk over them. It's the you know, sales 101. Ask for the sale and shut up. Don't say a word. The first one that talks loses the sale.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, and again, you get in kind of human nature where it's awkward, where you give them a price and then you shut your face and then they're kind of quiet. And this is awkward silence, but that can work to your advantage.
Live in the awkwardness though.
Live in the awkward silence.
Yeah. Just bathe in it. Let it come over you.
Like beautiful sun. Just bask in it. And that helps a lot. And I think going back to your entertainment side, when you were, you know, you were DJing a lot, you were talking in front of, you know, hundreds of people doing these.
Hundreds of thousands. Some hundreds.
Events. Yeah, like huge group that you were able to kind of get comfortable
in
awkward situations where, and then that helped you in the long run. I felt that too when I MC, I have, you know, thousands of people looking at me, and I'm actually okay with it because I'm going to make myself look like an idiot regardless of how many people
watch. Whatever. Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, you have to have a mentality that, you know, you don't care what they think.
You know,
whatever. Make it uncomfortable. I used to love the awkward pause, you know, because I would not break. I wouldn't break because I knew what I was doing, and if I broke, then it didn't give me the information that I needed on the next move.
That's
because
right.
I needed them to respond, whether it be good, bad, or at least you know, whether it be a grunt or anything, give me something, you know, give me a triple blink.
Break that. And when you realize that it's the awkward silence and you can play a game in your head of like, I'm going to win this. Yeah. It becomes even more fun. You kind of smile a little bit internally, like, oh, mm-hmm. good. I got him right there. I got him right there.
Yeah. I used to, one other thing with the awkward silence, I would, sometimes I wouldn't just stare at him. What I would do is I'd pull up my phone or I would get on my computer and I would be like, I'm waiting for you to respond.
Yep.
I'm here. I'm ready when you are.
I'm on your time, baby. Listen, unless it's in that hour, then you gotta go. But
yeah,
right now,
we got 10 minutes left, so we're good.
We're good. So you did that for 2 years, tons of travel, and then, you know, kind of got promoted, stayed within Charlotte, and now you're in a director position.
Yeah.
Where, and I think one of the big things I want to talk about, because a lot of, you know, selling for sports, you're dealing with a lot of different people that might not know what products you have or it's a new idea that you're pitching them. And that's what you're doing now is you have this, you're kind of leading a team of a brand new product that no one's really heard of. How are you getting across the idea that this new product is going to help you or the benefits from them when someone doesn't know what it is?
Who cares what the product is? That's how we get through to it. We don't talk about the product. We don't try to get them to understand how the product works. We just solve their problem with our product.
Yep.
So that's what it comes down to. So so I saw an opportunity within the company. We had all these other more aggressive solutions. And I kind of got tired, you know, kind of meeting with the small to mid-sized businesses. I was ready for the next thing because I was crushing it with the small to mid-sized businesses. You know, put me in front of whoever. My closing percentage, I think, overall was 80%.
Wow.
Which was, I mean, really good.
Absurd.
So I saw an opportunity within the company with a lot of other solutions that we had that were more expensive, and typically they were designed for bigger businesses. And I wanted to get back into, you know, you know, sitting down with, you know, the marketing director and the owner and the, you know, the business team.
Yeah.
So I pitched my idea to the president at the time. And so I had to sell the services before, obviously, you know, I could create a division and become the director of sales and grow this side out. So I learned to stop talking about product because my first 6 months, I had my pitch deck, okay, and we have 25 different aggressive digital advertising solutions.
Yeah,
you know, so I was going through them all, you know, and it would take me 30 minutes, and by the time I got to the end of it, okay, now this business owner was just like, whoa.
Now when did you realize the eyes kind of glazing over with all that information?
When my closing percentage was like 20%, something's wrong here.
Yeah.
I need to go back to my previous sales process. What am I doing? But at the time I was figuring out how to sell it. And that's what I pioneered, was really figuring out how to sell these solutions at a high level.
Yeah.
And to a lot of businesses nationwide. And so I finally figured it out, but I wasted a lot of meetings figuring that out.
You were grinding. But, hey, what's you're that? You're grinding.
We froze for a second.
We're good. I froze. That's my bad. Yeah, you were grinding it out. You were figuring out of what was working, what was not. And I love that answer of saying, it's not about the product. It's about finding the solutions. And that's what I get a lot of. You know, when I talk to some people, it's, well, I'm so like, you know, NFL, NHL, it's no, it's you're looking for the solution for the problem. And that's what we can provide solutions.
Right. So you guys in your industry are doing the exact same thing that I am in my industry.
Okay? Yep.
We're selling eyeballs to business owners. We're getting them in front of consumers.
Yeah.
It goes hand in hand. My billboards and, you know, are digital. Yours are in the stadiums and seats and all the other things. And what was hard for me to figure out was, you know, cell phones, they could walk away with something physical.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what helped me really early on with telecom is the only thing that the business was walking away with was the contract. That was it.
One piece of paper that had nothing on it.
There's no physical. There was no hardware. You know, that was all done by our engineers and everything like that, which helped me go into the digital world where the business owner, that's all they walked away with was their contract. They got nothing.
Yeah, that's all. They, nothing.
they walked away with a contract, and I had all their logins and their passwords.
That's it.
King of the castle.
King of the castle. Yeah, get over that. I mean, good for you, man. I mean, that's just – it's to figure that out and work that process and have so much self-awareness that you know, hey, this isn't working because you're looking at numbers. And I think it's strength to realize there's an issue. And it's me because I'm pitching the product too much.
I'm talking to, you know, oh, they just can't afford it or whatever. No, I didn't provide value to them. All I provided them was confusing them with all this technological – digital, you know, verbiage and information and I put them down a rabbit hole that they probably didn't get out of for, you know, 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, they went home and deleted their Facebook. they canceled their AOL Gmail, you know, and Gmail accounts.
It is everything. That was one of my problems is early on when I was struggling, when I was doing outside sales, when I was in, you know, uniforms, I was pointing my finger to other people and saying, It's your fault because of this. Or it was mostly when I was off supplies. It's this. It's my territory. It's this. When realistically, I had to turn those fingers inside and say, am I doing? It's very tough. But when you finally have that strength to look at yourself and say, I'm not closing. I'm not making enough calls. I'm not getting enough meetings. It's because of what I'm doing.
Right.
Not what you're doing. It's what I'm doing.
It's so easy to blame the company and the other sellers have it easier, Y and Z, the territory, or, you know, anyone can find an excuse, okay? But the people that become successful is they don't find an excuse, they find a solution.
Exactly. Exactly. And then you can find that solution before.
You look at the problem and you figure out how to solve it.
Yeah.
Just like sales. You're solving the business's problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the big takeaway. That's the big takeaway. If anyone learns anything today, it's find that solution. You find the problem off of the solution.
Right.
They go hand in hand.
And the problem doesn't have to be the same for you to provide the same solution. You got to figure out how to present your solution to their problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So there could be five problems and you have one solution that you're selling. Your solution is going to work for that problem. Your solution is going to work for that problem, that problem, that problem, that problem.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out how to position it to solve in that problem.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, I wish I would know how many sales meetings I've been in, you know, in my tenure of sales. I mean, it's probably, you know, insane amounts, but I enjoyed it. You know, I enjoyed the process and the hunt and the close. That's what kept me going.
Oh, you know? Yeah. That I always get like a little high when you get someone signed on the dotted line and it could be for $500. For $50,000, I get that same adrenaline, like endorphins.
Even if they signed and I had to give them $5, I mean, I was excited.
To get ink on paper was an absolute phenomenal
thing. Listen, sir, I will give you $5 if you sign this.
So I did that one time. I was struggling in office supplies. I was real bad, like, and I desperately, desperately needed a sale. And I was like, I'll tell you what. You buy one thing from me, and I'll throw in a free bag of candy. I got in trouble, but I was like, I just needed someone. I need to put an order in for someone. I was right. on the.
Right. I'm going to get fired, please.
Yeah. Well, I did get fired.
That line before.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna get fired. Please buy something from me.
Well, you know, and when it comes down to it, when there's actually no objection, you know, and you can't isolate an objection why they're not buying, you have to go to pity. At that point, you know, you have to find a way.
Because yeah.
My motto is if you can't get through the front door, okay, you go in through the back door.
Yes, I guess. I always use the window just because
What are you, robbing them?
Yeah. It's a bigger window. They forgot their keys.
Did your mind go somewhere that it shouldn't have?
Maybe. Probably. Okay. Probably. My mom listens, though, so.
I was talking about, you know, opening the backyard patio, walking across.
Yeah.
You know, with they're hiding the key under the grill and just opening the back door and saying, hey, I'm going to cook you guys muffins. You know, hope you're hungry.
Hope you're hungry. And just a nice, nice meeting with a brunch.
Yeah, hope you guys like mashed potatoes.
Well, speaking of mashed potatoes, brings me to my next question, which is very awkward. So you've been sales for a long time.
tell you got to have an awkward or a funny sales story of something that happened to you that you can share.
Well, yeah. So immediately it came right back. You know, it was hidden back there. I have a bunch, and maybe but the first one I can think of, and hopefully the rest will come because I've had some hilarious ones.
Oh yeah.
It might be funny to everybody else. It was scary to me at the time. So we'll start with that one. So I'm in. I'm doing my role as a, you know, the closer, the training events manager. I'm flying around, and I can't remember. I think I was in Texas, and we had five markets in Texas. And so okay. Midland, Texas, Odessa, Oneonta. That was New York. Anyway, I was somewhere in Texas. Okay, so. It was a smaller market, and the event wasn't going that well. And the whole purpose of flying me in there was to get, you know, a certain amount of revenue.
Yeah.
So the event wasn't going well. So at that point, you know, I didn't just sit in the conference room and say, well, you don't have any appointments. So I'm like, hey, I got a number to hit too, and I want to help you guys hit the number because I'm going to be back here in 6 months, and I want to show you guys that I'll get in the weeds with you and bought it.
Yeah.
So I ended up popping in one of the radio sellers' car, and he says, hey, I have a meeting. It's after hours. It's at 6 o'clock, but the guy wants us to meet him at his house. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Money's money. I'll go anywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm a big guy, you know, like yourself, yep. You know, I'm 6'6", you know, I feel pretty, you know, secure. So I'm like, whatever, I'll go to someone's house.
House is fine.
So, we pull up and, the radio rep is driving and they pull up and I'm in the passenger seat and they're like, oh, he's right here. And, you know, let me call him and he'll come out. So she called the business owner and he opened the door and waved. And so I'm like, okay, great. So get out. So I'm grabbing my laptop bag and my stuff out of the back seat. And I noticed that the radio rep wasn't getting out of the car. And, she was like, oh, I'm just going to finish up some work. You go ahead. And, you know, obviously you don't need me in the meeting. I'm like, okay, whatever. Okay. So I grabbed my bag and I'm walking into this guy's house. You know, it was a ranch style, you know, it wasn't in too bad, you know, sketchy of an area. But as soon as I walked in, this guy had guns everywhere. I mean, he had a shotgun in his entryway up against the side. I mean, he had, you know, more deer horns and stuffed animals than I have ever seen before. You know, I didn't even know you could stuff those kind of animals legally. And so that was, you know, the really uncomfortable situation. Then he had a small office he turned a bedroom in the house into an office. And I'm sitting there in his little office and probably the oldest, you know, metal chair that you can even think. And he has paper stacked all of the side. So not really funny, a little scary, but.
So, I mean, don't mess with Texas.
Hey, listen, I got the deal.
Hell yeah, you did. But yeah. Walking up.
So I'm in an awkward situation. So I gotta adapt. You know,
At
that time it's like fight or flight. am I gonna die over a $500 deal?
Maybe. Probably. Depends. You weren't doing too well, like you said that week. You needed that sale. You needed the.
Yeah.
Hey, at least he went down swinging.
I sure did. But well, hey. So the first thing I did was I addressed the situation. So I called out the gun. I was like, that's a big gun.
So was it on his desk? Or was it like?
Well, the first gun was a shotgun and it was leaning up against like the entryway. But he did have a pistol in his office on top of a paper stack.
Paperweight.
Did I see DJ Royale join?
DJ Royale did join. He did join. Well, we're cutting down low. They kick us off after an hour, but there is one question. One question.
One question from John
Muzzy. So, what's the most unconventional tactic you've ever utilized to secure a meeting with a prospect?
Unconventional. I can't think of the most unconventional. You know, outside of, you know, just trying to use different tactics, you know, via LinkedIn or Facebook, calling them. I think this doesn't really answer your question, but I think this is a good example is I figure out how to get through gatekeepers very early on. And the tactic I used was I knew the gatekeeper was there to block me. Okay. So I'm the running back. Okay. I'm Gronk. And it was a game to me. And so I figured out that if you address, say, hey, this is Andrew Wolford, W-O-O-L-F-O-R-D. Okay, you say your name, you spell your last name.
Yep.
Is John. So if you say your name and you spell your last name, it throws them off. It catches them off guard, okay, because they think that you're a client because you spelled your last name.
Wow. Yeah. I would say that's a little unconvincing. I've never thought of that.
Because no one says their full name when they're calling in, you know, even if it's a family or whatever. And I said it with authority, like, hey, I mean business. Hey, this is Andrew. You know, I didn't say, hey, Julia. I said, this is Andrew Wolford, W-O-O-L-F-O-R-D. Please let me speak to John.
Yeah.
Trigger.
Got him! And then, change that tone. That is, from a different level, you just change the tone. They don't get that call, so it makes they're flooded. Right.
Now, there's different ways to get past a gatekeeper, and that was always, but that was my one that I always liked and used. Now there was other ones that I used and liked, which was you know, chatting and you know, hey, you know, how are you?
Yeah.
You know, try to do that. That didn't work as well as saying your name and spelling your last name. And not demanding, but the authoritative, like, please let me speak to John.
Yeah. You're not being a dick. You're not being too great. But you're just I'm a person of importance. Straight to the point. Like, you're almost their boss calling in.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I need to talk to the –
Right. You're going to be in trouble if you don't transfer me.
Yeah. You're just using that tone, not coming off as an asshole. You're just, you know,
to a professional.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So I want to hopefully people that are listening and that are in sales try that, okay?
Yeah.
And let Justin know, give him feedback, because it worked for me 70% of the time, which is just like 100.
Yeah. I heard 70% of the time works every time.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's very beautiful. But hey, Instagram Live is going to kick us off soon. Andrew, any last words for the people?
Just keep motivation, keep the hustle, okay? Because there's always somebody that's going to outwork you, and find a solution to a problem, whether it be your own problem, you know, why you're not motivated, why you can't call another client. But at the end of the day, the client's problem. That's all you need to do is solve their problem and they will buy.
Yeah. Hell yeah. That's awesome.
That's it.
Hey, I appreciate the hell of you joining me. I tried to get the rights for 50 Cent Out of Control Remix. That was a song that brought us together.
Let's end on this song, and I think you'll like this one.
Oh, God. That is beautiful, my friend. I love that. Right, hey, man. Hey, thank you so much.
All right, man.
And there it is. Episode 127 in the books. It's done. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me. You brought an absolute ton of knowledge, ton of ideas, ton of ways that we can twist and turns and think about and kind of get some new business. So thank you very much. It was so much fun having you on. And I'm not going to talk too long because we've been here for an hour or so. We're just going to let it roll. Follow me on social media at Sports Sales Coffee on Instagram, Facebook, and on TikTok at SSC_podcast on Twitter, Sports Sales and Coffee on LinkedIn. If you have an idea for an episode, if you have a question, if you want to chop it up, slide into my DMs. Let me know. SportsSalesCoffee@gmail.com. I'm saying them out of order. They're in the bio. I don't know. That's a wrap. If you got the opportunity to sell something, make sure you like, subscribe, and, you know, leave a review. I can't talk right now, so we're going to end it right here. If you got the opportunity to go sell something, go sell something. Peace.